welcome to Empowering Homeschool Conversations. My name is Peggy Ployer, and I'm the host of this weekly broadcast put on by Sped Homeschool, as well as its founder and CEO. We at Sped Homeschool empower families to home educate children with learning challenges, and I encourage you to check out our website at spedhomeschool.com to learn more about the resources and support that we offer families. And I'm excited today to have one of the Sped Homeschool board members on, Dr. Jan Bedell. Welcome, Jan. Thanks for coming back on the show.
Hey, it's great to be able to offer some encouragement today.
Yes. Yeah. And we're kicking off a new month. So last month we were talking about medical challenges, and it was a pretty heavy month. And so we decided to follow up this month with some cheap, free resources that you can use in your homeschool, especially to help a struggling learner. And I just want to encourage you to be part of this conversation. I see that we already have one viewer on YouTube already saying hi. Kara Sue, hi. Well, thanks for joining us. And if you have any other questions or comments throughout our discussion this hour, we just want to encourage you to put those in the feed. If you are watching where you said reserve my spot, just know that you need to go to the YouTube channel link to do that and comment on YouTube. You can't comment on that platform. And you can, but we won't see it and make it part of our conversation. And if you're watching our Facebook page, we'll be able to see that too. But if you're watching in the Facebook group, our support group, just know that you have to give Facebook or privileges to share your identity. Otherwise, your comment is going to come up as anonymous or not at all. So make sure you go through that little process, or just flip to our main page to make comments. So just some logistics about if you're watching live. And I know many of you are listening on the podcast or watching this after it's recorded. And I thank you for doing that. So Jan, we're kicking off this this theme, but we're going to be talking about neurodevelopmental strategies that that help with student success. And I know when we first talked about this, you know, sometimes we think about free things as just free what we can get, but we don't think about those things that we can do to help underline issues, so we don't spend as much money. And That's what I'm excited to talk about today with you. And so just to help our audience get to know you better, if they've never met you or know anything about you, I'd just love for you to share a little bit about your background and why you're so passionate in this area with helping families, as well as just your excitement about neurodevelopmental strategies overall.
Okay, well, that's a long 30-year journey. you were right about me being passionate about this topic, because it helped me. So basically, you know, going back 30 years or so, I was where a lot of your viewers are. I had a special needs child, and she was really struggling. I had homeschooled her for 5 years with a traditional approach, because I was an educated teacher, certified teacher.
Right.
So that's all I knew to do is educate her the way I was taught.
Yeah.
Well, I was about to give up at that point at 5 years, because she wasn't really making progress. I didn't know what to do. So you know how God tends to come in and rescue you when you're at the end of your your rope. Well, that's what happened with me. He showed me the neurodevelopmental approach and asked me to commit to another year of homeschooling with a different approach. And I tell you, it was very challenging, because the things I had done and learned and thought were the things that were going to be the thing that was going to make a difference. It was just turned upside down. So I had to really change my paradigm and think differently, because, you know, I was pretty desperate. So I was open to that.
Right. That's amazing how desperation does that.
Yes. It was challenging, though, because, you know, it just went counter to what I had been taught. Right. So basically the neurodevelopmental approach is how to build the foundation of brain function so that the learning can, you know, happen easier. That's what it's all based on. So, you know, most of us are focused on curriculum. That's what I was focused on, you know, how to teach phonics to my daughter, that kind of thing, with a certain curriculum. And what I've found that affects a lot of homeschoolers and costs them a lot of money is if they believe that this is the only way to teach reading, for instance, phonics, then they just go from one, buying one phonics program to the next, to the next, to the next.
Exactly.
Well, what I found out was that if the child's auditory processing is not where it should be, then phonics is going to be very challenging or not work at all.
Wow.
So what I found out is I've got to work on those foundational skills. That's what neurodevelopment teaches you is that foundation has to be built before the function can come. So that's what we did. We changed to what we were doing and it made all the difference for my daughter. Then I started training in this field and you know, basically God said, just take a left right here. There's more people that need to know about that this than you. And I want you to tell them. So that's basically been our mission ever since. So just so that we make sure that we don't skip this topic, which I'm sure we're going to come back to it. But the auditory processing and visual processing, that's your short-term memory. And I have a free test kit that I understand you have the link. Well, actually, you go to our homepage. It's not just a particular link, but if you go to brainsprints.com and then go scroll all the way to the bottom, you'll see free auditory test kit. And that's a free resource that your listeners can use and see where their child is. I'm telling you, when you know about that particular aspect of your child's development, you will know things will start making sense. Because when you have a child that's low processing, they're actually developmentally more like a younger child. So it takes a lot of frustration out of your interaction with your child if you go, you know, instead of saying, you're 12, you know.
Why are you doing this? Exactly.
This, that, or the other. And if you find out if they that they're low processing, then you go, aha, that's why. And so it reduces the frustration a lot because, you know, you're 12, you should be able to stay on task. You know, you're 12, you should be able to remember your chores, you know, things like that. So that's one thing that I just really want to encourage your listeners. That's a part of the neurodevelopment is working on that short-term memory, both auditory and visual. And then they can bring in more information. So there's some that free test kit, and then there's some simple little tools that we have on very inexpensive little tools on our website that help in those areas to build that skill.
Great. Yeah. And if you're listening again, the website is brainsprints.com. And I'm sure we'll be talking about it again throughout this this broadcast too, because Jan has so many good resources and writes so many great blogs for our website as well. but yeah, well, thank you for giving that overall picture, especially, you know, as people are starting to listen to this podcast, they're going, do I want to hang on? I hope you want to hang on, because Jan has a lot to share, and all of her things just are so wonderful. And she has so much wisdom to share. And so, you know, where did the neurodevelopmental approach come from, and the whole the whole basis of thinking. It's not, I'm assuming it's not to replace curriculum in essence, or is it just a different approach to actually teaching?
I guess it's both because, you know, there's some fundamental things like the keys, what we call the three keys to learning, which is frequency, intensity, and duration. So to help your listeners understand that, it's frequency is how many times a child needs to hear something to be able to really have it.
Oh, okay. You
know, we'd like to just tell them one time and they've got it, right? Because limited time for homeschoolers. But they really are going to have to hear it multiple times. And then intensity is how strong that information comes in. So for example, you know, if you just sit your child down with a lesson for math, for instance, and you are giving them the instruction, you know, the input on how to do a certain thing, you know, maybe a math concept or something. And then you go off and leave them with that page in front of them. Oftentimes the intensity goes way down at that point, especially if their processing is low. So just a real tip on how neurodevelopment, this frequency, intensity, and duration works. We found that if you stay there with your child during a math lesson, for instance, for say 8 to 10 minutes, and you do a problem, they do a problem. You do a problem, they do a problem. Now you think, so many people are like, isn't that cheating to sit there and do their problem? But what we're really talking about here is giving input with intensity. So if you do the problem for them, it takes all the pressure off of them doing it. Because, you know, sometimes those books, they give you the lesson and they teach it to you one time and they expect you to know it.
Right.
Well, if they see it several times, then it's so much easier for them.
Right.
So what we found is it actually, and, you know, some people say, well, I don't have 8 to 10 minutes to sit here with this child on math, you know? I got stuff to do, diapers to change and clothes to wash. And so what we found is it actually saves time because let's think of it. If they get their page done and then you've got all these mistakes on the page. You go back to them and you have to go over all those mistakes. And the child's defeated and their attitude is bad because they don't want to, you know, get it wrong. And so you spend a lot more time with the emotional and the correction than you would if you just sat there and did it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It's the... the planning, it's the beforehand instead of, you know, picking up the pieces afterwards. And then they learn it wrong too. And then you have to correct that. And it ends up being even more work to undo what they have done.
That's exactly it. So with that frequency, you're showing them several times. They're doing it, you know, after you. And that intensity is you're sitting right there with them. And you can catch the mistake before it even happens. You know, getting into it. And then we suggest a very short duration, just a short periods of time instead of, you know, the child sitting there for 30 minutes and you go back to check on them and they're upside down on the chair playing, you know, making a fuzzball out of the carpet. Because the time went too long. So as far as neurodevelopment, you know, there's techniques and then there's curriculum that I've developed based on the those techniques, frequency, intensity, and duration, but also the main part of neurodevelopment is getting that brain working optimally.
Okay.
So if you think of it like this analogy, where you've got a computer and it's a pretty nice computer, got a high speed, it's got good memory and all that. But if you hook up that computer to DSL, like we have, I used to say dial up, but
right.
most people
don't have that anymore.
Yeah, they probably have not experienced that. Most of our homeschoolers that are homeschoolers today, but yes. You know, those were the days. You know?
Oh yes, my husband and I were talking about that tone, and my daughter looked at us like, "What?" She goes, "Oh, don't! Isn't that like something you just hear on like a phone ring?" I guess they have no, but
yes,
yeah,
yes.
No.
So if you're on DSL with that computer, is it going to work as well as if you were on high-speed internet?
Right.
You see the difference?
Yes.
Nothing changed about that computer. It's still as smart as it ever was, but it's not working efficiently.
Right.
So that's what neurodevelopment is all about. It's building that foundation in the brain so that the function is better.
Got it.
So yes. I can give you another example in a different area. So let's say you're wanting to have your child write correctly, you know, hold their pencil right and make those letters the way you want them. Well, what if the pathways are not built from their brain to their hand and their hand feels like fluff? That's actually how one child described it. You know, the teacher was wanting them to make this certain letter, you know, and write well. And he said, "How can I do that when my hand just feels like fluff?" So when you build the pathway from the brain to the hand, then the function can follow. And that's another way of taking the frustration down out of your homeschool and is just not expecting something to happen that the brain is not, you know, in the body, that connection is not there.
Right.
So there's lots of different ways that you can build that particular connection. It's it's really pretty easy.
Really?
You mash on the child. You mash on their fingers. You mash on their hand. You mash on their arm. And this is done also with frequency, intensity, and duration. You know, several times, a couple of times a day, for maybe a minute, from their fingertips to their shoulder, mashing on them. Well, every time you do that, it sends a information to the brain. Oh, this is my finger. This is my arm. And it's actually building the pathway that they need to be able to write.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I suppose they just haven't had the activities necessary to locate that in with their body space and all of that.
Yes, there's lots of things we do culturally that cause that kind of thing to happen, for them to just miss those little steps. So it's interesting. I don't know. I've got so much to share. I don't know for sure which direction to go.
Wherever you feel led, we're going to go that direction. So, okay. If you got something to share, share it.
Well, you know, what we found is that we've become a very visual society. So our auditory is going way down.
Yes.
And we also see that culturally, we have so many gadgets to put our infants in. It's almost like you're not a good parent if you don't have one of these and one of those and one of something else.
Right.
and it's also culturally, the grandparents aren't saying to their children with their children, put that baby on the floor. You know, don't hold them all the time. Don't put them in that sling. Mm-hmm. Don't carry them around all the time. They need to be moving around.
Yeah.
You know, we're even doing things like always having the infant sleep on their side because of the sudden infant death syndrome. And they think that that is the cause. Mm-hmm. And so they're not on their stomach getting that information. Just think of an infant on their stomach rubbing against the material.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You see, they were getting information to their brain about their arms and legs just by doing that.
Right.
And so there's so many things that culturally have changed that have caused the development to go down.
Right. Yep.
That a lot of children are struggling. And the cool thing about it is it's never too late to get that information back to the brain.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, God has given us such a gift, and neurodevelopment is based on plasticity of the brain.
Huh. Yeah. Explain that. I know what it is because I've talked to you. I learned it from you. but maybe some of my viewers don't know what that is. And I know even when you spell it, not many word spell programs even like that word.
Yes.
But yes, because it's
so plasticity is where the brain can grow and change based on input. So that's why we keep going back to the input. Just like the physical input of pressing on their arms, there's auditory input, visual input, there's movement kind of input that starts to organize the brain and change the way the brain is wired. Basically, it's changing the wiring of the brain.
Right, yeah.
And when you do that, the function just starts to come up. It's just amazing how that happens. So instead of struggling with a curriculum and going from one curriculum to the next because it's not working for your child, then you build that foundation and things start to work better.
Yeah.
I guess another example of that is this the thing about learning styles that have come up. And kind of segmenting how you're teaching your child because you think they just have this learning style and they have to be taught, you know, kinesthetically, which is the most inefficient way of learning something. You know, I mean, if you're doing a math problem or learning to read, if you have to hold it and feel it, it takes a lot more time and effort. So what we try to help people understand is you want to be good in all learning styles because some information's better comes in auditorily. Some information comes in better visually, and some comes in better kinesthetically. So you want all of those working to their optimum. So like, for instance, math concepts, we believe it's better coming in visually. And that's why we say you show it to them. You don't say much. You just show them.
Yeah.
And with the auditory, the things that come in better auditory, one of those is math facts. So when you just think about it, when you see or hear 6 + 2, you tend to hear 8 in your brain.
Yeah, I did.
So it's better for that to come in auditorily. Now, it can come in all the different ways. And that's what we do with our rapid recall system, where the child sees and hears and says and writes 5 math facts 14 times a day. It only takes 6 minutes, going back to that frequency, intensity, and duration.
Right.
But they, I just totally lost my train of thought. they hear it very often, or they hear themselves say it, or they hear someone else say it with some intensity. That's what I was trying to go with. Okay. To bring it in that best channel. So one of the free resources that I have for you too is that what we call math facts assessment. It's a free assessment. You can just download it, and it has the instructions and everything there, so that you can kind of know where your child is in their math facts based on their grade level. So it'll say, you know, first graders should be able to do math facts in 1 minute about to this level.
Okay.
Or if they're in sixth grade, they should be able to do the speed and accuracy should be about this level. So that's something that they can use. To kind of see, well, do I need help here, or is it not such a big issue? So that's something that they can use.
And then, and I will put that link in the YouTube description after the show so that you can you can get to that.
That's a really good free resource that you can use. And then you know, some of the children are behind in math, many of them. Especially the ones that are coming to SPED for help. And what I've found is oftentimes people feel like they have to go through a whole curriculum, you know, take them back to a couple of years or something, go through the whole curriculum at that level to get up to where they need to be. But what we found is working with this concept of visual circle math, that's another low-cost kind of... It's a low-cost product that can actually help describe that strategy and give the family tools to bring them up on their concepts that will... be quick. It will come up quickly instead of taking a whole year to go through this curriculum and then, oh my gosh, we have to go through this other curriculum. Because what we found is in the other areas other than concepts, you know, what I mean by concepts, addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division, those are the basic concepts. In addition to those, you've got time and temperature and, you know, measurement and all those kind of things. But they're repeated every year in those curriculums. So it's not like you have to go, and there's just a little bit in each of those curriculums about those things. So you don't really have to go back and do a full curriculum. It's more expensive to do that and takes a lot more time as well.
Just to be able to get to the bottom of what's causing the issues. And it's amazing how kids can transfer that once those base skills are there, then you know, it's just like the reading, you know, you get a few of those neurodevelopmental pathways there, and then all of a sudden you use the same curriculum you had before and it works.
It is amazing like that. That's what happened to me, actually, with my daughter. I had spent 5 years trying to teach her to read with phonics. And I mean, she knew every sound of O-U-G-H. She could, you know, all 70 phonograms, that kind of thing. But bless her heart, she could not hold the pieces of information together. Because of her processing was so low. So she could do three letter words, but after that, it was just like, oh, I don't have a clue. She couldn't, because phonics is an auditory approach and you have to hold this sound, this sound, this group of sounds, and this rule together. Then she couldn't put all those pieces together until we got her processing up. So we taught her a different way, and then we added the phonics back in. She had the best of both worlds.
I think, parents will often just pick one side of the fence or other. But I love that example that you share, that it doesn't have to be one or the other. It can be both. It's just, you know, what's the underlying issue?
And, right. And yeah. And fixing that so it's not a frustrating experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because oftentimes the children think that they're not very smart or there's something right. really wrong with them mm-hmm. when they can't get it. And the parents get so frustrated.
Right.
You know, that's the thing. I guess that's basically where I was, is mm-hmm. it was so frustrating to try to teach her because over and over and over, it was not getting there.
Right. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And again, it was because those foundations were not built.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we've talked about reading and we've talked about writing and we've talked about math. So I think we have a lot of the bases covered there. Where else do you see struggles that neurodevelopmental strategies tend to be helpful that mm-hmm. parents may not be thinking about?
Yeah. Well, what comes to mind is where the child remembers something one day and not the next.
Oh, that's a big one that we get questions from parents about. Very mm-hmm. frustrating too. And both for both the child and the parent.
Exactly. Because the parent will say, "You knew this yesterday."
Right, exactly. You
know? And the child's going, "I'm drawing a blank here."
Uh-huh.
And that's where some of the self-esteem issues come in as
yes.
well.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So neurodevelopmentally, we look for where the storage of information is.
Mm.
So basically in neurodevelopment, the four steps to learning are receiving, that's getting the information in,
mm-hmm.
Processing, that's your short-term memory,
mm-hmm.
and then storage of information. If those three things are lined up, then utilizing or using information works well. But uh-huh. if there's glitches in one of those places,
mm-hmm.
there's challenges.
Right.
If there's glitches in all those places.
Oh, yeah.
You see the compounding effect.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like so compound true. Interest.
Yeah. In the negative version of that. Yes.
Yes. It multiplies the challenges. So that's why we encourage people to find out more information about this. And I guess I ought to mention that on YouTube, we have in Rumble, we have a channel mm-hmm. called Brain Coach Tips.
Yes.
That's mm-hmm. Brain Coach Tips.
Mm-hmm.
And there we have lots of discussions about treating the root cause and, you know, difficulty mm-hmm. in this area. What could cause that? Labels. What could yeah. cause the symptoms of ADD and ADHD? Mm-hmm. What could cause the symptoms of dyslexia? What we found is it's not just a genetic situation. It's like how the brain is organized.
Hmm. Yeah. And I suppose, like you said, culturally, we do certain things. And mm-hmm. in families, we do certain things, too. And that causes us to replicate the organization of our brains to our kids. That makes a lot of sense.
Yes. Yeah. That's why some people say, well, it's just generational. It's mm-hmm. it's genetic.
Mm-hmm.
But you're very right. You know, grandmother did it this way. I mm-hmm. do it this way.
Right. And you forget why you did it that way. It's just that everybody's done it that way.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh. Mm-hmm. So going back to that, that inconsistent recall, frustrating
yeah.
for everybody. And what we found is that it has to do with dominance, like what hand you're using to start mm-hmm. with. That's where we start with dominance, is the hand.
Mm-hmm.
And what we found is some children that have been in a preschool situation, maybe they were switching back and forth from one hand to the next,
okay. mm-hmm.
and they were influenced to be a certain hand.
Right.
Where the hand is really genetically right or left, if they're switching back and forth, which is totally typical for a young child, that's why putting them in preschool is not always a good idea. Because you know, they're telling them to write things and stuff, and that's when oftentimes
and curriculum is written. So that it's easier to read when you'd write with your right hand. We don't think about these things, but yes, if they're influenced at an earlier age, that's going to choose that for them. You're right.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's where you start with dominance. If there's some left-handed people in your family, so aunts, uncles, cousins, basically first cousins, grandparents, parents, if they're left-handed, there's a possibility that the child is genetically left-handed.
Wow.
So you kind of want to watch for that. If you have a younger child, put everything at the midline so that they're not influenced by the location.
Right.
You know, if you're always putting the crayons on the right side, they're typically going to not reach across, but just pick it up with the the right hand. So writing utensils, cups, you know, anything that even Legos, if you put them at the midline, you can start to see which hand is genetically supposed to be correct.
Yeah.
So if the child is mixed handed, that's an indication that those lower levels of the brain are not organized to the point to let that dominance come out. So that's why we do a lot of the lower level organization that happens more when you're a much younger child. And that, again, builds those pathways that we were talking about to begin with. And then after you determine the hand dominance, which sometimes you need some help with that, you know, from a professional, especially if they're older.
I mean, I was going to ask about that. What do you do if they've already kind of been forced and then the struggle is there?
Right. Well, just an example from what the work I've done, I had a 15-year-old one time that came to me. He was just had been struggled all his life with learning. And we found out he was really supposed to be left-handed, and he was one of those that was told early, you know, no, it's easier, you know, to be right-handed. Well, it's only easier if you're genetically supposed to be right-handed.
Exactly.
So we actually switched his hand at 15. Yes, it's obviously easier when they're younger.
Yes, but lots of retraining, I suppose.
Yes, but it was amazing what happened with him. He just took off in learning, and that took care of most of his learning challenges. It was pretty incredible. So influencing the hand is real important, not to do that as they're little. And then going through those developmental steps so that true dominance can come out. That's like a neurodevelopmentalist can help with that. And and the great thing about the internet and the technology we have now is we can do virtual kinds of work.
Yes.
I'm even working with a group in Uganda right now virtually to help. Because certain cultures, again, they do certain things that discourage development, and when you get that back, it can be very wonderful, the results. So after that hand dominance is established, you can look at the eye and the ear. So to help orient you there, your one side of your brain is controls the opposite side of your body. So your right hemisphere is going to control your left, and your left hemisphere is going to control your right. So think of it this way. If you're right-handed, your file cabinet that you look for things in is going to be on the left.
Okay.
And if you're left-eyed and putting information on the other side, it's going to be a whole lot harder to find.
Right. Yeah.
So the analogy I have there is like if you had a filing cabinet and you put a picture of a giraffe in the second drawer of the filing cabinet, and it was a really long filing cabinet.
Okay.
Okay. So your child says, I want to see the picture of the giraffe. And you go, okay, no problem. And you open the second drawer. And of course, the first thing you do is look for it under G for giraffe. It's not there. And then you go, oh, it's probably under M for mammal. It's not there either. But you know it's in the second drawer. So you start searching and searching and searching. How time consuming, energy expending, frustrating.
Right. Yeah.
Is it going to be to find that information? Well, I see two different personalities that have this issue. One is going to dig and dig and dig.
Right. Yes.
The persistent ones.
Yes.
The others are going to say, it's too hard. I'm out of here. Bye, Mom.
Right. Yeah.
They don't even want to try because it's so frustrating for them.
Yeah.
And so what we found is when you're all lined up on the same side as your dominant hand with your eye and your ear and your foot, it's more efficient to bring information out. And most every time when we see parents say, well, they just, you know, it's such an ordeal because they've got it. You know, the light bulb went on.
Right. Yeah.
And the next day, they just look at it like a cow at a new gate. It's like, what? So, yeah, that's what we found is the root cause.
That makes so much sense. Yes.
Of that. So finding the root cause of whatever the issue is, you know, like for a lot of our kids, they're sensory sensitive.
Yes.
Like clothes just bother them. So they're just moving around all the time to try to get to
the
deal
tags
with that.
Off and yes.
So again, if we're expecting them to sit still and pay attention when their brain is getting this sensory overload that goes, all I can pay attention to is this.
Right. Yep.
So if you address that root cause, then you reduce that symptom. Oftentimes it even goes away.
Yeah. Just,
So that's the exciting thing about neurodevelopment that I just love is one, looking at the whole child instead of one specific thing.
Right. Yeah.
I'll give you another example. In my case, my daughter was in speech all of her life, you know, just about.
Which is a typical thing for a lot of our community. Yeah.
So the goal was to get her to talk in longer sentences, right? Well, when I went to the neurodevelopmentalist, he said she can only process three pieces of information.
Oh.
Now, how is she going to talk in 5 to 8 word sentences if she can process at a three? So the whole thing about, you know, working with a speech therapist that's only working on let's lengthen the sentences.
Right. Exactly.
It doesn't work. You have to work on the root cause of that, which is that short-term memory. If you're working on that, then your sentences just automatically get longer. That's pretty exciting how that happens.
That is. And I think we always come at it from that top approach because, I mean, that's how the school system is set up. It's an easier way to teach because if we came into a classroom of 30 kids and tried to get to the root of every child's issue, it's too difficult to do in that model. And so the top-down approach is you know, the typical education model. But as homeschoolers, we have this freedom to work with our kids individually and get down to these basics that that really will help them succeed and soar. And like you said, this connectivity and just being able to get that learning in and back out.
Yes, that's the beauty of homeschooling. I mean, not only, you know, in the school, oftentimes the IEP says more one-on-one time.
Right.
You know, so they pull them out.
Right. Well, and that's what we've got all the time.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, I mean, we don't have it all the time. In a perfect world, we would. But, you know, homeschoolers have so many obligations during the day. But still, you can carve out that time and have that one-on-one time with your child. And what I've found, Peggy, is if a lot of parents are just like fear and trepidation of homeschooling a special needs child. And it's really the best place for them to be.
Yeah.
If they're equipped, the parents just need to be equipped with what to do. And the progress, what we've seen, is they progress, you know, dramatically different than if they're in the home, in a school setting. One of the clients that I worked with, he came from a homeschool. I mean, he came from a public school and the family was not in the mind of homeschooling, you know?
Yeah.
And so I convinced him to do at least 1 year of homeschooling. We had the summer and the school year and another summer. And he went back to school and they put him, because he was labeled dyslexic, they put him back in the dyslexia class. But they didn't retest him to see if he really needed it. They just assumed that because he had dyslexia,
he was an older student and it would,
Yeah. So that they put him in there and the mom asked after several months, because he had done this, you know, all the foundational kind of things for that amount of time with Brain Sprints. And when he went back to school, he was in this dyslexia class. The mom, after several months, said, I'd like to know how he's doing. And the teacher said, oh, he's doing fine. And she said, no, I want to really know what's going on. And the teacher said, well, to be honest, I don't know for sure why he's in this class, because he's leading the way for all the other students. He's getting all of it. And so he had that basis of phonics that was now released to be efficient and to work for him in reading. So, just being equipped with the right thing, homeschoolers can make a major, major difference.
Exactly. And that's it. It's being equipped. And instead of, you know, just trying to do the same things. And like we talked at the beginning, it doesn't take a lot of time either. You were talking about just these short spurts, but that one-on-one and reinforcement and doing things alongside them, allowing them to just get the input. That makes the world of difference. And we don't often think about that. We think, okay, I'm going to teach it and then it should just come out. And it doesn't always do that.
Exactly.
And we all get frustrated over it.
Yes. Well, and again, the curriculums are built with output. So
yes, that's a good point.
And so my motto is, if you don't like the output that you're getting from your child, you got to look at the input.
Yes.
So do they need more? Do they need it differently? Or again, are one of these foundational things not working right so it can work well for your child?
Yeah. An easy change is just increasing the frequency of input. Like you said, we can do the problems right alongside them. And if that solves it, that's an easy solution. But, you know, doing a couple things like that and then saying, well, these aren't working. So there's got to be a root something else to dig deeper with. And the tests that you offer on your website are really helpful to help parents, you know, just to see what's going on. Because we tend to beat ourselves up. And then we say, well, it's our child's problem or our problem. And then, yeah, it ends up being it's just a disconnect that we need to work with.
Well, and another low-cost thing that I was thinking of, you know, so many therapies are so expensive. We came up with what we call a neurodevelopmental screening. That's something we can do virtually or, you know, at one of our locations. We've got, I go to Denton and Conroe and close to Austin area.
Okay, so all in Texas. Yep.
Yeah, all in Texas for the in-person. And then virtually, we can also do a screening. But what the screening does is help us identify some of the major root causes of challenges and give direction to the parent about what they can do to change those things. So that's something so that's on our website, too, under services. You might look into screenings, neurodevelopmental screenings.
Okay.
And we also have consultation, free consultations for families that are just going, I don't know what to do. I don't know where to
exactly
start.
Where do we start?
what is it that we need to look at or pursue? And so we have that option too on brainsprints.com. You can get a free consultation to help kind of direct you where you can start. And sometimes we just send them back to those, the YouTube videos to get a little bit more of the philosophy so that they know whether to pursue something like this. For me, it just lined up. I mean, it just made so much sense. You look at the whole child instead, you know, the tactile, the auditory, the visual, the language, the mobility, how are they able to move? And that gives you the clues on where to start.
Yeah, it's kind of like that stepping back and looking at the bigger picture where we're so close and we're so involved that we don't often do that. And there's where the frustration comes in because to have another person come in and do that with us is so helpful because then you can see it clearer too, instead of, you know, bringing in, like I said, it's my fault, it's their fault. Well, maybe it's something that we don't have to point any fingers and we can work around this. So yeah, it is helpful to have that third person involved and to help evaluate. So and like you said, you know, it isn't like a full neuropsych evaluation that costs thousands of dollars. This is a very inexpensive option to start saying, well, there's something underlying here. Let's try to see what it is and how we can work around with what we're doing at home instead of just putting a label on it and then still trying to do the same thing, which is usually the case.
Yes. I actually have something on the YouTube that says to label or not to label, because some people are on the fence about that. You know, I was not really wanting a label for my daughter. I just wanted what was going to help her. But the school that she was in at the time, before I even knew about homeschooling, was saying, you know, if we get a label, we'll probably be able to help her better. Well, all the label did was discourage everybody and bring low expectations. And I just said, no, I'm not receiving that negative word over her life. I'm just going to do whatever I can to help her. Sometimes labels can be very helpful if you need specific therapies that, like insurance.
Right. There's a place for that.
And then in some cases, it's just like, what some people are afraid of, they use it as a crutch. The children that aren't as severe. And they or have complicated issues. Mm-hmm. They just use it as a crutch instead of pressing in. And, you know, what I want to do is help the families unlock the child's fullest potential. That's a
good way to put it.
Mm-hmm. That's what I want to do. You know, whatever their potential is, we want to unlock mm-hmm. that to the to the best of the abilities.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. So again, Jan's website is brainsprints.com. And then on YouTube, you said it's Brain Coach Tips.
Yes.
Yes. And there'll be some other links. I'll share all of them down in the description of the YouTube video and also on the podcast description so that you can get to those quickly because some of them have longer URLs. But again, that... on your main page down at the bottom, that's the auditory processing test. Is that correct?
Yes. And actually, we've included the visual test in that.
Okay.
We do say on there, because auditory processing is kind of a buzzword these days. Mm-hmm. You know, people mm-hmm. are starting to understand it. Right. When I first started, nobody even knew what auditory processing was. But now that it's gotten to this epidemic proportion and it has a label, you know, mm-hmm. central auditory processing disorder, you know, they call it a disorder.
Uh-huh.
Then we put that as the title, but just so that you know, there's a way to test for younger children and even nonverbal children.
Oh, that's good
for
to know. Mm-hmm.
The auditory processing. So it says it's the Tiny Tot, test kit for the auditory processing, but it's really for anybody that's nonverbal, even if they're not not a tot.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And it will also have a visual test kit too. So your visual short-term memory, that you can test both of those.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's very helpful. So yeah. Well, thank you, Jan, for all that you've shared. I didn't even bother to look at my questions. You just kind of rolled right through.
Well, hopefully we covered what was needed.
I'm sure we did. Yes. I know so many new families homeschooling and asking, what do I do and how do I help my student? And so much good wisdom that you have learned. And and I know you've repeated these many times because they're right there at the top of your thinking about what parents need to hear. And so thank you so much for just taking time to share with us. And just as an encouragement to parents that they can do this.
Yeah.
I think a lot of time that's the first, you know, we got to get over that hurdle. That it isn't as hard as, well, sometimes we make it. And there may be some simple things that we can do to make the road easier ahead.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You can do it. And God is leading you. I just want you to know, you know, I believe God is leading you. And some of these circumstances that have happened that have caused you to be in this position to homeschool that you never thought you were going to be in.
Right.
You know, he's worked all this for good for your child.
Yes. Yeah. You're in the same boat as the majority of us. we're all reluctant homeschoolers when we have special needs children.
Exactly.
It seems that way. I don't think most of us actually said, yeah, I'm going to homeschool. That's my first choice. but it is. It's a blessing. And, you know, looking back, you know, I'm sure same as you and me, you know, many families we've heard from said, I just would never do it any other way. So just want to encourage you if you're on the fence or just getting started. Just know that you're in good company.
So, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, Jan. I encourage all of you to check out her website at brainsprints.com, where she has even more things to share with you. And if you just search Dr. Jan Bedell on the Sped Homeschool website, you're going to find some amazing articles that Jan has written. She contributes about every other month. So we've got a lot of really good content from her, and just always, I read through them before they even get published, and I learn more each time too. So thank you, Jan, for all that you do to just inspire and encourage as well as equip homeschooling families with struggling learners.
It's my pleasure and honor and privilege.
Yeah. And thank you for your friendship. That's near and dear to my heart. And I just want to thank what?
So glad God put us together.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And we're glad that all of you have joined us today and are listening to these Empowering Homeschool Conversations. And we thank you for joining us on this episode. Just know that we have a lot more resources at Sped Homeschool that we make available to families home educating students with learning struggles. And you can check that out on our website at spedhomeschool.com, and our podcast, Empowering Homeschool Conversations, can be found on just about any platform out there that podcasts can be found on. And then join us again next time. Next week, we are going to be talking at the same time, same locations, about using library resources to homeschool. And so just some different ways you can use those free things that you pay for through your taxes to homeschool your students. So I'm looking forward to that conversation. So thanks all for joining us. And thanks again, Jan. It was a pleasure having you back on the show. And we'll see you all next week right here. Bye, everybody.